Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts, arts and entertainment in our region, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we'll hear from Richard Mann and Spencer Callan with the Union Drifters, a folk rock band based out of Las Vegas and Riverside, with a self-titled CD just released. First, though, Lillian Vasquez gives us more on an event coming up in Yucaipa on the campus of Crafton Hills College, an event with food, entertainment, and healthy living.
My guest is Colleen Hines. She is the department chair for Crafton Hills College for Kinesiology and Health, and she's here to talk about the Herbivore Festival, which is taking place on Sunday, May 6th at Crafton Hills College. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
So tell me, why was the event created and what's its goal?
So I have been a vegan or a plant-based eater for over 14 years now. And for a number of years before that, I was a vegetarian. And before that, I was a hardcore meat eater that ate at fast food restaurants and didn't know anything about eating healthy or what I should be doing for my body. It took a number of years to learn what I should be doing for health, for the animals, for the environment. And I thought, how could I speed up this process for other people? How could I bring that awareness to them? And how could I provide them with all the tools to make the process simpler? Because even when I went from vegetarian to vegan, it was a four-year process for me. I thought people were crazy when they didn't eat cheese and eggs and all these things. I was like, oh, you're just eating nothing but lettuce. How do you live? Now, obviously, being on the other side, I see all these wonderful food choices and the cruelty-free cosmetics and just this huge industry that is out there that's supportive of a plant-based vegan lifestyle. So I wanted to provide that for others, put it all in one place. I wanted to say, here are the foods that you can eat. Here's the educational information on why it's good for your health. Here are the products that you can buy that aren't cruel to animals. Here are the types of clothes that you can wear that don't support the leather or the fur industry. So I just kind of wanted to put everything in one place so that it made it simple and easy for somebody to make that next step.
So my next question was, who's the brainchild of this event? But I guess we know who the brainchild is.
Yeah, this is my baby.
What goes on at the festival? Share some of the either the workshops or the lectures, the activities, the performances. What's going on at the festival?
So this is both an educational and a fun type of an event. So we have about 200 vendors that are food vendors, cosmetic vendors, all the way to the spirituality related thing, because we're talking about making the person whole and not just one individual aspect of a healthy lifestyle. And then we have multiple lecture rooms. So two lecture rooms are solely dedicated, running all day long from 11 to 5 on lifestyle and health-related topics related to a plant-based diet. We have two rooms that run all day long that are spiritual rooms, so talking about encompassing that other aspect that makes a person whole. We have a cooking or a food demo room that's going on all day long. We have two rooms that are environmental and gardening-related, so tips on how you can grow your own foods. We have some people talking about growing, even cultivating mushrooms and things like that. We have a performance stage that's happening all day long, so supporting a lot of local people who play music and dance and perform for us. And then we have a fitness area, so you can come and do your yoga and your Zumba and all these things. So demos going all day long that you can jump in and participate in.
So let me back up a little bit. So talking about some of the classes, are they people from the community? Are they faculty? Who's teaching the classes?
We have a combination of all of it. So we have a lot of community members that are solely plant-based or are even learning in this process of becoming plant-based and sharing their information. We have people like Jenny Brown that's flying in to actually speak for us. She's going to be talking about Meet Your Meat and the background behind the farming industry and what's actually happening to the animals. We do have some faculty members that are speaking or doing some fitness activities. So it's kind of a blend of everybody. We do want to, you know, do the local things and support the people in our community that are already helping make this movement possible. But we also want to bring in some of those other powerhouses from other places and jazz it up a bit.
Cool. And about the performances, and where is the performance stage?
So the performance stage is in front of the Performing Arts Building.
The Finkelstein Building? Is it still called the Finkelstein?
I don't know if it is still or not, actually. We just call it the PAC now, okay. Performing Arts Center, but I think it's the same one there. So this like a little half dome quad area. So we're going to have a stage there. And actually, Jennifer Sparks from Sixth Street Music is helping us with that. She's donated all of her equipment, which really makes it fantastic, and is helping run the stage and has brought in local performers in the area so we can showcase some of the talent. We have some students that are performing there as well. So a little mix of, you know, the professionals to the students. So we get everybody in there.
Cool. So who is encouraged to attend?
We want everyone to attend. So this is a family-friendly festival. So this is not like you have to be a vegan or you have to be interested in changing to one or you have to be an activist. This is literally just you want to live a healthier lifestyle. You want some education on how to, you know, make some changes in life, how to eat healthier, just open your awareness. Just want to come have fun, want to grab some exciting things to eat. In the past, we've had literally it's a lot of families. So we have, you know, parents strolling their kids around. We have a free bounce house that's going on all day long. So, you know, there's some fun play and things. We bring out the hula hoops for the kids too. So we want literally everybody. We want our students in the community. We want our older adults. In fact, we have a lot of older adults that attend because we present topics like how to reverse diabetes and heart disease and cancer. So those are a lot of the things that are going on in the health room for the day, lifestyle room. So it really is just for like absolutely everybody. Just a wonderful day of fun and education. Totally free.
Where does it take place on the campus? Because the campus has grown tremendously and it's changed a lot. So maybe someone who hasn't visited Crafton Hills College recently, where is it located on the campus?
It is in the absolute center, the heart of the campus. So there's a long strip that runs down the campus. It's just one long run from the top of campus to the bottom and literally halfway down. For anybody that hasn't been on campus.
Or halfway up.
Yeah. Anyone that hasn't been on campus in a while, if they remember the old library, we now call that the Crafton Center. It's a brand new building. That's where a lot of our lectures are occurring. So right in the center of campus, hard to miss, where the bus stop is a really great orientation point there. And in the quad, or where most of the vendors are, and in the Crafton Center, where we have some of the lectures, as well as in the new Learning Resource Center, which is our library, our new library a little further down there. So really kind of we've taken over the center of campus. We're kind of hard to miss.
So it's free to attend and free parking?
Free parking, free to attend. The goal of this event is literally, I just want to get the information out there. We are totally nonprofit, not making a single cent off of this. And in the past, this was something that I funded personally out of my pocket just to get it going. And now I'm getting some vendors that are, you know, chipping in and providing some donations. We don't even charge against the vendors. We just say, would you make a donation so that we can keep this going? So the idea here is just education and fun. Let's get something cool going on in the community.
Oh, very good. Who's eligible to be a vendor and what's the criteria?
So anyone is eligible to be a vendor as long as the only thing that they are selling or promoting is 100% plant-based and totally cruelty-free. So we even have vendors that is not their normal market, but they will come to the festival and they'll provide those options. And that's what we really want to encourage too. We want more plant-based options that are out in the community. And as the vendors start to experience that there's demand for this, you know, maybe even if it's just not that donuts are the healthiest in the world, but maybe this vendor makes a vegan donut for the first time and comes to the festival and they see how many people want to purchase that. That means that they're going to, in the rest of their selling, start providing those vegan donuts. The guy who sells Indian food, then he'll see how big of a market there is for these vegan options. And then it'll encourage him and his business to start selling more vegan options. So we really want to open this up and provide it as a doorway to making more plant-based options in the community.
So you don't have to be a vegetarian. You don't have to be a vegan. Anybody is welcome to attend.
That's absolutely correct.
Tell me about your logo. Where did that little logo come from and describe what that logo is?
Okay, so Mr. Turnip, he's just so cute, or we call him Herb Ivor. A cute little turnip with a odd-shaped eye. He was actually designed by Christy Simonson, which is one of our classified staff at Crafton Hills College. Rick Hogreef actually kind of asked her. He said he knew her background and that she did some drawing and said, would you be willing to draw us a little vegetable that would, you know, show the fun spirit of the festival and make it exciting? And so she drew this for me a couple years ago, and it's been our mascot ever since.
Great. I'm speaking with Colleen Hines, professor at Crafton Hills College in kinesiology and health, and she's talking about the Herbivore Festival that's taking place on May 6th at Crafton Hills College, and the public is invited to attend. Thanks, Colleen.
Thank you so much for having me. Look forward to seeing you guys all on May 6th.
That was KVCR's Lillian Vasquez. HerbivoreFestival.com for more. You can also hear about the Herbivore Festival on Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez with an air date of April 26th and on the web after that at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. You can also listen at kvcrnews.org. Coming up, we'll have music from the folk rock band The Union Drifters, specifically music and conversation about The Union Drifters' new self-titled CD that was out January 19th. And with quite a return to Riverside hometown show in mid-February, from the Union Drifters, I spoke with Spencer Kalman and the founder of the group, Richard Mann. First, I think I want to talk about friends of the band versus the hometown crowd, okay? Because you guys just came back to Inland Empire Brewing not too long ago.
Yeah.
And with a friends of the band kind of thing, I would say you might expect a dozen SAIs or Phi Mu Alphas to attend. In this case, you guys packed. This is the hometown crowd. You guys packed Inland Empire Brewing.
Yeah.
There's a write-up somewhere. This is maybe for one of the Las Vegas gigs. Says that you, Richard, grabbed his guitar on impulse and played all night on the streets of downtown Riverside.
That is true.
That's the nice romantic version of the story.
When I was talking about that, I had an old buddy from high school, and this must have been probably right after we graduated, which was in 2010. And I was extremely shy when I was in school. I wouldn't sing in front of anybody. I never sang in front of my parents didn't know I sang. My parents didn't know I played music, really.
What? How do you hide that?
I would get so nervous to sing in front of people that I never did. And one day I was hanging out with my buddy. His name was George Ochoa. We were just sitting there playing. He played guitar. I was playing some guitar, and I started singing. He's like, dude, what are you doing? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, dude, you're so good. He's like, let's go. And I was like, what do you mean, let's go? And he's like, put on some clothes. And I was like, all right. So, like, at the time, I'm horribly obsessed with Paisley, like, obsessive with it. So I had some Paisley. I threw on a Paisley t-shirt and a bow tie. We drove to downtown Riverside, and I literally stood outside of Lake Alice, MTL, right in that little spot
right there. Okay, yeah.
And just made up songs.
songs.
I was just making them up. I probably knew, like, one song or something at the time. And just sat there and, you know, had like a little hat or something, and people were throwing some money in. And that was kind of the start of my personal musical journey.
We also have in studio Spencer Kalman on fiddle and trumpet. And how many instruments do you bring to the band there?
Oh, wow. I can play keys, backup vocals as well. Any of the brass instruments, really, I'd be able to put down on. So I wouldn't put an exact number on it, but it just comes down to what we hear, what we feel would fit with the music. And, you know, that's the fun thing about it is it's this creative process in the group. We're all coming together with our different ideas, and it just fits.
Let's get a feel for your background for a second, because going from fiddle and to trumpet, that's nowhere near typical doubling as far as switching instruments. Aren't you working on composing or higher education? What are you pursuing?
Yeah, so I'm actually a music educator at the moment. I'm pursuing a master's degree in music education right now. But my background is I went to school for on the trumpet, but my parents were very supportive in everything in the arts. I've been a longtime listener of KVCR.
Hey.
Grew up listening to NPR every morning is kind of what I heard. Went to college for music and studied that. And what I realized is afterwards, kind of entering into the real world and playing music, kind of had to throw that all away and forget to read black notes, you know, and it's about making the music. And that's when meeting up with a bunch of other groups and other musicians and collaborating, it was exciting to get to the heart of it, of making music that came internally rather than, you know, just reading it off of a sheet of music. You know, my mother was a concert pianist. So growing up, I started on piano. And then I was just really excited to take anything. So in my elementary school, they had a string program. Started that in the fourth grade.
Okay.
Picked up trumpet in band in fifth grade and just kept going with it. My parents were just very supportive. And wound up picking up bassoon in middle school.
On purpose.
Just, yeah. Well, it was kind of one of those where my parents were like, you know, if music is really a passion of yours and you want to do it, it's in high demand in colleges and in professional ensembles.
Was that your first reed then at that point?
That was my first reed instrument. That's
okay.
Correct.
So, that felt funny.
Yeah, it was a bit strange switching between bassoon and trumpet, but I stuck with it. And actually, through having the opportunity to touch all the different instruments and play them all, I was able to figure out like which ones I really love. So I love jazz. I loved improvising. I love creating music. And that's where the trumpet wound up becoming that instrument of choice, giving me that opportunity. The violin was something that was kind of a secondary instrument until afterwards, and joining up with various groups, there's Ava and the Vagabond Tales, that we kind of alongside were in a group back then in 2010 called the Mad Marionettes, and there were opportunities to play trumpet and then some songs depending on the tone of it. It was like, you know what, violin would be kind of cool in this one. So picked it back up. Started playing that quite a bit more, and that's just kind of how it's continued to evolve. But the opportunities were there, thankfully, to the public education system that we have out here. And that's something that I'm working on continuing and building a string program at the school I work at, as well as trying to bring in pop music and more real-world music.
Let's talk about the rest of the band coming in, how and who else do we have in here?
Kevin Bothwell, he's the original drummer and still the drummer of the band today. I actually met Kevin, I was working a job back at Sam Ash out here in Ontario. I was a greeter, so I just stood at the door and stamped receipts, made sure no one was stealing any strings or anything like that, you know? And we got a new greeter in, and it's a two separate ends. So I was on the mall side, and then on the parking lot side, we got a new greeter. And I looked down there, and I was like, man, like that guy looks so familiar, and I didn't know why. And I actually saw him. I couldn't think of it for, like, probably the first hour and a half. But I was on the phone with him. I called him on, like, the store phone down to the other side, and I was like, hey. I was like, I know you from somewhere. How do I know you? Who are you? And Kevin was all shy about it, and I was like, I know you. I was like, I saw you play with this band, Charlie Moon, back in the day. And he's like, oh, yeah. And I was like, yeah, I played in this other band, and we, like, opened up a show for you guys. And so that kind of was the start of our friendship. And at the time, I recorded the first version of Old Man, which I recorded in a closet.
Okay.
A long, long time ago. It was
literally
just,
in a closet.
I was in a closet. I was sitting in, like, the smallest closet. I was, like, hunched over. There was, like, one tiny microphone.
Oh, this is because your parents didn't know you played music.
Yeah.
This is that thing. Okay.
No, but it was completely different, too. So it was just one acoustic guitar and vocals, and that was it.
That's so different than the Old Man that we have
now. Yeah, it's definitely, it's progressed a lot over the years.
Yeah. So how about then Miles and Brittany? Well, and then how did Spencer get into the picture then?
Spencer, I actually met at a house party.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it was like up in the hills of Riverside somewhere. Someone had like a sweet house and there was like a pool and like, you know, you hear like, oh, there's going to be a bunch of beer and everyone's going to be out partying. I was
That's all
right.
You need, yeah.
Exactly, you know. And so I ended up going to this party and I got there and there was like some people jamming in the backyard. I don't know who was playing acoustic, but there were some people playing acoustic guitar. And then I saw Spencer there. I didn't know him at the time, but I was like, this guy's playing trumpet. And then he put down the trumpet and he'd pick up a fiddle. And I was like, so what the heck? And then I'm pretty sure I Facebook stalked him for about, you know, the next 4 months.
Oh,
and
wow.
Like, I was like, come be in our band. Play in our band, please. And then he would come out to shows every once in a while. But he'd never be like, oh, I'm in the band. He's like, I'm just going to sit in with you guys. And then eventually won him over.
Yeah, you know, the thing about that is like hearing their music. Like in the beginning, you run into other musicians and they're always like, oh, play my group. But when I heard Old Man and I heard the vocal harmonies that they had, I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. You know, I want to be a part of this project, but, you know, I don't want to just invite myself in and put myself in. So I said, you know, like, use me whenever you can. Like, I'm happy to play in the group. You know, funny thing about it is the band was actually called something else at that point in time.
Oh.
It was called Richard Mann and the Super Tramps.
Yep.
And actually,
everyone hated that name other than me.
One of the first things I said, you know, you guys got a great sound. You got some great ideas here, but we got to change this name.
Somebody thought of Super Tramp already.
Everyone thought we were a Super Tramp cover band. I swear that we'd get that all the time.
Yeah. So
long way home.
Yeah. We wound up kind of putting it to a band vote and changed the name. And then slowly over time, it went from Rich and myself and Kevin to Miles, wound up becoming a part, and Brittany as well. Brittany Hauser. They were just kind of friends in the same music circles.
Yeah. So Kevin and Brittany were best friends growing up their entire life. And Kevin started playing with us after I showed him that demo that I did in the closet. I was like, you need to put drums on this. And he's like, I don't think it needs drums. And I was like, Kevin, this song, I was like insistent. I was like, it needs drums. You're going to put drums on it. You're going to play in my band. And so we did.
How could you fit the drum kit in the closet, though?
We didn't. Not we. We just had that one for now. So we started playing shows as a full band. So Kevin invited Brittany out. We were actually playing the Art Walk in downtown Riverside. And we were on top of, what was that building? The Life Arts Building?
Life Arts Building in downtown Riverside.
Yeah, they had us on top of the roof and playing up there. And Kevin was telling Brittany, hey, I just joined this new band. You got to come out and see it. They've been friends for so long, and Brittany has gone to see all of Kevin's new bands that he's played in over the years. And so she was really not about it. And he was very insistent. He said, Brittany, like, I really think you'll like this group. Just give it a shot. Just come out one night and check it out. So she came out and saw us at the Riverside Art Walk that night and instantly became the biggest fan of the band. Like, I think after that, she probably never missed a Union Drifters show.
So how did she go from being a fan to the person showing up with four strings in hand?
Exactly. So we ended up going through like a lineup change. Like I said, Anthony and Victor,
who
I started the band with, we kind of parted ways. And at that point, I needed more of a band. At this point, it was me, Spencer, and Kevin. So we needed a bass player. We needed a lead guitar player.
Yeah.
started looking around, and I knew that Britney sang, but I didn't know she sang like that.
Yes.
You know, and she had a killer voice, can like instantly find harmonies on anything, you know?
Well, that's
like
the cool thing about Brit. She has a perfect pitch.
Yeah.
You know, you could play the sound of a lawnmower and she'll be like, oh, that's a B flat, you know?
I want to hear that.
It's incredible. It's absolutely insane. I remember like playing notes on a piano. Like I would sit there and I'd play like these chords, like, and then have eight notes in it or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, what was in that? And she could like name them all.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
It's crazy.
Wow. Lucky to have that. That's Richard Mann along with Spencer Kelnan with the Union Drifters. More at theuniondrifters.com. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. Also at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming.
I've traveled on the open road, and I've got dirt in my hands. And I've seen the stars in the southern sky, and it brought a tear to my eye. And I walked the valley of death just to feel alive, because I lost my soul and I needed it most, and I didn't know if I'd survive. So I go on down to this place I found, where I feel okay.
I want to hear about, I suppose, songwriting, who contributes what the whole process is. But I'm going to start with the opening track, Going Home. The line that catches me every time, and I actually pulled over to write this down today. I walked the valley of death just to feel alive.
Yeah.
So I wrote down, wow. Now, and then, and then it follows, I suppose, and it's maybe more explained better with, I lost my soul, I needed it most, didn't know if I could survive. But
yeah.
Talk about these lines. Where did this come from?
You know, just the struggle of day-to-day life, especially in today's society, like growing up. And, you know, there's a lot that goes on, and I feel like being an artist and exposing yourself a lot, you know, it's not as easy as it looks, you know, to like get up on stage and sing these songs that are, you know, near and dear to your soul.
Right.
Like you're basically just an open book and, you know, everyone, look at me. This
it's
is how I feel.
Often, yeah.
Yeah.
So I pack my bags and go to the only home I know.
Basically, you know, this was when I was writing it, especially like that line, I walked the valley of death just to feel alive. It was when I was like going through a lot of points in my life where, like, you know, I was going through a lot of depression and immense amounts of anxiety. You know, there was a period of time where I pretty much didn't leave my house for almost a year straight because I was just so anxious. I couldn't do anything. And so I really drew a lot from that and how I kind of came out of that. And you know, kind of when you're in that, you lose hope almost, as horrible as that sounds. But it's like, when you're in so deep sometimes, you can't really see it, but it's about trying to get out of that hole that you're in, you know?
This one starts off the disc, and
Yeah. It's
a gentle rhythm to it. It mm-hmm. does pick up. Makes me think of Nickel Creek. I don't know if that speaks
okay.
to you at all.
I do love Nickel Creek.
Yeah, Chris and Sarah and Sean.
Yeah.
So I pack my bags and go to the only home I know. Free from this.
So this is what this feels like. And I suppose when I was picking up the disc and playing it for the first time, I wondered if that's what I was going to get into or hear for the rest of the disc. And it's not, by the way. There's a nice string that holds it all together. But what I want to address is that a few of the songs on this disc, they start off very slow, okay? There's a slow drift, as it were. And then they pick up to a different tempo. And so I'm wondering if any of these that appear on this disc, are any of these the case of what were a couple of songs that became one, or at least separate phrases that found their way to one another?
Definitely. There were a couple, as far as lyrically, that we kind of glued together. Like, I remember a long, long time ago when we just had tons and tons of ideas. I had a huge whiteboard, and it had lyrics and songs that were half written on them. And we would kind of take some phrases and plug them in. Okay. But as far as, like, the tempo changes and stuff like that, a lot of that comes from Kevin and his love for weird timing and changing. He definitely likes to throw curveballs at you. Of them is, like, they've evolved over the years. Like, when we first started playing these songs, you remember how different they sounded from, like, 5 years ago to where they're at now. You know, it's almost like you wouldn't recognize it, you know.
Yeah, you know, some of the ones, one of them that has some of the most drastic time changes would be Devil in Her Eyes.
Oh yes,
it jumps back and forth from a slower to a fast, and that kind of comes from playing back in the day with the members from the Mad Marionettes and Ava. We would do street busking and just playing out there. And the idea is you're trying to create these, like, high energy movements, so that contrast of slow to fast would kind of take place. And that kind of influenced us. It's not like we set forth to write Devil in Her Eyes with that in mind. It was just, we played it one way and we're like, you know what, let's create something that has some power into it and has some energy. And actually, when we play that song live, we stretch it out. There's solos. Yeah. We do a solo battle between Miles on lead guitar and myself on trumpet. And we take that song into a whole different experience in that live performance setting. That's kind of that evolution of it, is it's just organic, and it's kind of feeling what the crowd is doing and what they're feeling, and it's just something that we've seen work with other groups that we participated with and played in, and it's like, you know, this, it just kind of happens.
Now, on this one, you've picked up the trumpet, and you do a cool little, I don't know, it's a trumpet laugh. This is right about She Kicked the Bucket Just an Hour Ago. Yes. Was this an afterthought? This was an improv thing that you threw in, or did he ask for that?
You know, it's one of those sound effects. We had it for a while where everybody would go, oh, and create a sound effect, and then Kevin on drums would do, like, boom, 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 pop. There's a variety of sounds that you can create on the trumpet that people are maybe not, and one of them's like a horse whinny or like a howl and things like that. So it was just one of those funny things we threw in there, and we're like, oh, that's cool. You know, let's just stick with it. So that's just that creative process of together as a group, you know, we're all in a practice room together playing what we can, and it just kind of stuck with it, so...
It really fits the song, too, because the song is, like, lyrically, it's very, like, theatrical.
Yep.
You know, it's telling a story of this girl who has the devil in her eyes, and this guy is, like, cursed by her, you know? And when we were in the studio, I wanted to put as much weird stuff and like as much goofy and kind of quirky sound effects and things mm-hmm. into it as possible to really fit with that. Like, we have a lot of weird stuff in there that's pretty buried. We have Kevin screaming in the back, which is kind of hard to hear, but
we have a toy piano. We have, Brittany piano. Laughing in there.
Yeah, yeah. Brittany. We put her in the reverb chamber at Blackbird. I was like, do like your like gnarliest witch laugh. And so we just got that and kind of put it in the mix and just a lot of weird stuff. But it was that was probably the most fun to record, definitely.
You know, that's where we get into the trumpet being like, you know, when I'm coming into it, trying to treat the trumpet more as like if I'm singing with it, you know, it's an extension of me, you know, like I'm singing through the trumpet in a sense. So that's kind of where that sound comes from.
Well, somewhere in here I have, and I guess we'll get to it when I find it again, but that you do, Spencer, that is, sometimes with a trumpet, it is a lead, sometimes it's an accompaniment, and sometimes it just seems like color thrown in because it feels right. And I mean that in a very good way as far as color, just extra textures, making just a little bit thicker. We referenced Old Man earlier, this song that was, I guess, just very thinly textured, just you and a guitar in a small, confined space. By the way, your mom, I know she knows that you play music. I met her at the gig.
Yeah. So we were selling posters. They both know now,
Yeah. Well, so now that that's out in the open. Okay, Old Man. I keep on wanting to call this one Old Song. But this is another one. This one starts off with such a strong drive.
Yeah.
The way it starts off, it almost feels like it could have been the one to kick off the disc because of that drive. Did you consider that at all? And I guess I'm wondering, built into this, who was responsible for the order of the disc, the flow? Everything, it should have a flow. It can't be a collection of digital downloads.
Yeah, definitely. It was a little bit of everybody. I kind of threw a list together that I thought would be a good flow for the album and sent it out in a group text. And, you know, we kind of went back and forth on a couple things.
Yeah, usually when we go and do a show, you know, it's taking a look at it as an entire start to finish, like from the start of the show to the end of the show. And the layout of the album kind of follows that flow of how we would open our show, kind of start building up to it and then building into Old Man and then kind of bring it back down and then finishing with a nice strong finish. So the album itself, the order of it, I would say a lot of that came off of playing live and seeing
what worked
and telling
best.
The story. Right, so as you mentioned, it not being one song independently, but part of a bigger picture that is the album of start to finish.
Really, again, I appreciate it. A music program, anything, should have this kind of a flow. And too many people these days are just doing a collection of tunes. What's 79 minutes that'll fill that piece of plastic? And people, unfortunately, will just look for tracks 3, 7, and 9. This comes up a lot in my interviews, so I appreciate you guys doing the flow. It's important. It's not just the age of listening to vinyl or whatever, although thankfully that's coming back.
On his lover's song, she knew she did the man wrong. He walks the night, whistling tunes of an old song. Oh, when that summer sun goes down, until that spring wind blows around, I'll be singing songs about you and me. That's how we
That's music from the Union Drifters in conversation with Richard Mann and Spencer Kalnan. More at theuniondrifters.com. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Also at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming. Back now to conversation with Spencer Kalnan and Richard Mann with the Union Drifters, talking about some of the songs from their self-titled release, Just Out.
Along the sunset tracks and I'll hold fast desk on my back, and I'll head for the hills if it comes to that. Cause when I hear angels singing, I won't come back, and I hear road signs and railways, the calling out my name. And I hear road signs and railways calling me by name.
Road signs, okay?
Yes.
Oh, this is where we get back to Spencer, too, because this is maybe one of the ones that I wondered if it was a couple of songs melded into one. And Spencer, this is such your song, the lead lines as well as the color. So with you, I'm trying to get a feel of your approach. How much is written out versus what's felt and thrown in? You sort of alluded to playing between the notes earlier.
Yeah, so the melody line that's going on in the violin, that actually originally started on the guitar, if I recall correct, right, Rich?
The lead part, yeah, Anthony kind of came up with that, and then we tweaked it a little bit.
So we tweaked it and evolved, and that's the thing, is where some ideas may start on one instrument and move over to another, just based off of the feel. So I present the melody line in the beginning, and that comes through, and that's kind of a shift from that heavy, we didn't want the heavy electric guitar powering through with that. It's kind of saving that for later.
Right.
When the guitar can come in and take that solo. So it's a little bit of blending that balance. It's like, you know, you're cooking a dish and you have your spices and you don't want to overwhelm it with too much. Having that nice blend and balance of the various sounds, the tones, the colors like you referenced.
Who, by the way, does that lead nearing the end, the lead guitar, when that finally does come in as a dominant?
Miles.
Okay, that's Miles. Okay. Last Train to Georgia, if you recall the phrase that built the song, or was it the chords that needed some lyrics on top of it?
For me, the songwriting process is always different. So on the album, there's Not Today. And so Not Today is part one, Last Train to Georgia is part two. They're intertwined. And it's basically this quote-unquote love story. It starts off with, she said I'd board that plane from Georgia if you'd be my man. So this guy is waiting for this girl that he's in love with, and she's supposed to get on this plane to come and meet him, you know, live happily ever after. And that never happens, so he's waiting there in the airport. She never shows up. You know, it sucks to be heartbroken, but it's like, you gotta keep pushing. Like, and so Last Train to Georgia is actually set place like about 30 years later. When I wrote it.
Do we need to go back to Not Today before we...
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's do that, because then... Well, we're going from track 5 back to track 3 then. So, Not Today. This could have easily been called something to the effect of Not Gonna Take My Blues Away. But again, it's that following line, but Not Today. But I gotta keep this train rolling, no matter how bad I need you. So it's such a sort of an extra touch of defiance here, showing this need.
Yeah.
So this is a part one and part two. Again, address this then. Not Today, going into it's, two tracks later.
You know, this guy is so in love with this girl, and it's like, I would call it that young love, kind of which I was experiencing at the time, you know.
Okay.
You're 18, 19, somewhere in there, and you think you're in love for the first time, and things don't work out like you thought. You're looking up like, oh, I'm going to get married to her one day. This is going to be it. And then next thing you know, your heart's broken, and... there's not much you can do, but that's where I use the phrase, I got to keep this train a rolling no matter how bad I need you. It's really about that. And I'm really bad at songwriting in the sense of like, let me tell you how I feel. Like, I personally don't like songwriting where it's like, I'm really sad, my girlfriend just broke up with me, like kind of thing, you know. So I like to paint the picture, which is why in this song he talks about her boarding the plane and him waiting in the airport, her never showing up from Georgia, which is where she would be coming from. The second verse, it kind of touches on that again, and he talks about, I hear the open road a calling and the scent of Georgia pines, like wanting to bring her, you know, wanting her back. So it's kind of that young love that didn't work out. But going back to Last Train,
right?
It's that feeling like, I feel like sometimes you get, you know, you get older in life, you kind of yearn for that young love, like, you know, your first love, and it's like everything.
The feeling of that, yes.
Yeah, it's like everything was so good. You get older, you get jaded to relationships, kind of, you know, things like that. And so it's now Last Train is about him taking a train to Georgia to like try and go find her. He like kind of has like this realization of like his life, and you know, he's like, I need to go find this person, like whatever it is, I need to like find her and figure out if this can still be a thing. That's a pretty dark ending. Unfortunately, you know, he takes the last train to Georgia, but when he gets there, he finds out that she died.
Spoiler alert.
I know, spoiler alert. His love is dead.
I'm actually upset that I didn't pick up on the fact that Not Today, after a couple of tracks, picks back up with Last Train to Georgia.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too, with Devil in Her Eyes, there are so many things about this disc that I'm going to be going back and listening to it with a different ear.
Yeah.
Folks hearing this conversation are fortunate in the sense that I suppose they'll be able to pick up on it with the first pass through.
Did I gotta keep this train a rolling? No matter how bad I need you, 'cause sitting here on this day, it ain't gonna take my blues away. It ain't gonna take my blues away. No, 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 not today.
That's music from the Union Drifters in conversation with Richard Mann and Spencer Kalnan. More at theuniondrifters.com. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. Also at kvcrnews.org, I'm David Fleming. So what ended up on this disc, and it's just simply a self-titled disc, the Union Drifters. You guys weren't filling up plastic to put out a CD. You found the songs that had a common thread that could cohesively go. A couple more songs on this.
Yeah.
Raindrops, another beautiful, beautiful song. And again, we were talking about the harmonies earlier with this is just Brittany and you.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, you didn't have to write arrangements. You just sang the lead and Brittany came in and did it.
She did the harmonies and everything. She can, I just let her do her thing. I'm like, you're better than I am. Just do your thing. And
you know. I think playing or singing with her, you would have a lot of moments of, oh my God, did somebody press record, please?
Oh, yeah.
Now, there's really only one question about Raindrops,
yes.
And I swear it ends. The way it ends, it has a person wanting to hear another word or so. It's a very much a cliffhanger song.
Yes.
Okay,
I love that.
You did that on
purpose. I love to leave cliffhangers. Like,
let's talk more about that. The general want to do that, period.
Yeah,
But then specifically in Raindrops.
Yeah, it's like people, you want to leave people wanting more. I feel like all the time, like you never want to completely satisfy everything. I'm okay with resolving songs, you know, like there's nothing wrong with that, but there's so much tension in that song. That song, like saying our love is like a disease. The whole kind of concept behind that song was like, sometimes in life, you know, being in love isn't enough to like make things work with somebody. And that was what I was going through at the time. I was so, so in love with this person. And it just wasn't compatible. It was severely toxic for both of us. But we were both so in love that we just kept it going and kept it going because you have that love there, but at the end of the day, everyone's just getting hurt. It was like a disease, and that's why I used that line. I didn't want that resolve. I wanted that tension. I wanted to leave it hanging. And like,
I'm so glad that you're reaffirming or reifying, if you will, for this thing, because I don't want to think I maybe missed something for 25 rotations in a row of this disc and song that I kept on missing a cliffhanger, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
The last song on here, Waiting on You.
Yes. And
this is another one of those tunes. It starts with one thing. It's very much something gentle and longing, I wrote down, but then picks up to something else. But this one, it's not so much like a doubling the rhythm, like Devil in Her Eyes or something like that. This one is a more of a step-by-step, a building, not only, I think, of textures and colors once again there, but also the tempo. It slowly builds up, and there's other establishing factors, so it's not a shocker when you get to that.
Yeah.
Waiting on You. I do have a specific question about that, but tell me about this one, where it came from. What was the lyric that got this one going? What started it?
I think we're actually sitting in a room. It was actually Anthony back in the day. So one of the original guys that I started with. And he had that opening line. I think he had it as like a poem, something like that. I just thought it was super cool. And we kind of started messing around with it and came up with a chorus and then dropped in some other ideas in the second verse and just kind of built it. And it started off, I don't think we had that 4-4 part for a while. And then Kevin heard it and he's like, we got to drive it. We got to put this driving 4-4. I was like, all right. And he kind of helped with the arrangement of it. And it kind of naturally just evolved over the years into what it is now. But lyrically, I started with a poem, that first two or three lines. And then we kind of just built around that. And it's that same, I guess everyone writes about love in a sense, but that longing of somebody. In another situation, this girl left me. And in my mind, when I was like 21 or whatever, I was like, she was the one.
Again.
Yeah, exactly. You know, how many ones are there out there? Jeez, it's too many of them. But it was just that wanting of them back, you know. Man, like, I would wait forever for you kind of thing. And that's kind of where I got to.
Waiting on You.
Yeah.
Now, this one is also one that I had to address a very specific point in the song. Mm-hmm. This one, quote, ends at 3:08 into it. And then it picks back up again.
Yeah.
It's almost a bluegrass jam session. So again, is this something that were two songs, they threw in the other thing, or is this just sort of the jam nature of you guys? You didn't want another cliffhanger?
No, I think this was Kevin. I do think we were going to end it there or something, but he's like, no, we got to keep it going. I think you just start doing like a kick drum, like 4-on-the-floor kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, just kind of evolved, and I sang that melody, and then they started adding harmonies on it, and then the horn on it.
And the crowd.
Oh,
in a live setting, this is something where we'll pull friends, people we see in the audience, come on stage and sing it with us. And so everybody's together and clapping, and there's actually a moment right when we started off, Rich will vamp for a little while and keep it quiet. And he's like, everybody get down low. And then all of a sudden, 1, 2, 3, 4, and everybody jumps.
Yeah.
And it like really kicks it off. So it's that
big party.
It's this fun, and I think it throwback to those house shows where we had this fun element. It's almost that live improv feeling of, hey, let's do something more with the song. The crowd's into it. And like really engaging them and bringing the audience into a part of it. So they are a part of the band. They're a part of the music experience and that journey. It's an incredible feeling. It's an incredible experience when everybody is there making music with you.
And this one closes the disc, and it seems like this would be almost the automatic closer for you guys at a gig.
It definitely is.
Okay, cool, yes.
Just waiting on you.
the fact that the gig at Inland Empire Brewing sometime back and just how you guys packed it in, and the fact that some of these other bands that we were talking about, their early connections with Ava and the Vagabond Tales and Brittany, does a killer, killer song on Fox and the Red Hair's new disc. That's a Last Letter from Queensland. She does a song called Pollywog Bay. She has the lead on it through and through. There seems to be this wonderful, almost a co-op feel of the arts community, not just in 2D art and getting yourself hanging here and there, but you guys interdrifting all these Riverside, Redlands area bands. There's a lot of, it's not nepotism, it's more of a intermingling.
It's a family. Yeah. It's definitely a family.
With her being on that disc, that brings us back once again to Inland Empire Brewing, where not only can you get Fox Red Ale, it's they've got their own beer there, but that's also where you guys did your hometown return. And it was 2 years before you guys came back. I'll skip asking why, so will you be back sooner than that? You guys are only 3 hours away, man.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely be back sooner. Now that we got the album out, that was the biggest hurdle to get over. It's like we probably recorded the album 5 or 6 times before we actually...
over the past 5, 6 years.
Yeah, probably one a year, and that's not the one. That's not the one. That's not the one.
Okay.
And then eventually... we're finally happy with the product.
But now that the album is out, we did our homecoming show in February with Ava and the Vagabond Tales alongside us. You know, love that group, love supporting them. In general, this music community, it is a family. It's not a competition. You know, we're all in this to support each other and our arts and what we're doing. And there's a lot to be gleaned from collaborating and supporting each other. We're looking to come back out probably later in the summer, back out to Riverside here. You know, there's a couple other groups in the area that we'll be talking to and bringing into the show. Again, supporting that family and that sense of live, original music, which is really what we're all about.
It's sorely needed. You were talking about the multitude of songs that you guys have in your repertoire, and these songs were weeded out from that to get the common thread for this disc.
Yeah.
With so many other songs out there, are there already talks or plans for putting them onto a disc?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah?
I probably have about 80 half-written songs to ideas that I have and just music banks of emails and stuff like that. Right now, we're kind of going through the process of demoing some of the stronger ones that we feel like have a better shot of potentially getting on, like, the next record. So we're kind of going through demoing them, tearing them apart, rebuilding them. You know, and
so at this point, we're at the stage of playing them whenever we can and wherever we can.
Yeah.
And yeah, hopefully that next album, we'll start recording on that in the next year.
Excellent. Spencer and Richard, thank you very much for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having us.
It's been
a pleasure.
That was Richard Mann and Spencer Kalnan with Union Drifters. And once again, more at theuniondrifters.com. And that's just about going to wrap up another edition of KBC Arts. Thanks again to Richard and Spencer and to Colleen Hines with the Herbivore Festival at Crafton Hills College in Yucaipa, May 6th. Here at KBCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Benjamin Perper, Isel Quapio, Jessica Greenwell, and KBCR General Manager Keith Birkfeld. Beyond the music of the Union Drifters, music beds and themes heard on KBC Arts, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year, any time of the day, at kvcrnews.org.